Broadcasting live from my favorite brewery in the Austin area and helping you maneuver through this flowing dystopia. It's episode number 403 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag has Chad's three favorite ways to enjoy hop water. At 12:30, we're speaking with Whitestone Brewery's owner, or co-owner as it were, Ryan Anglin, about his fantastic operation and their six-year anniversary party tomorrow. And in mere minutes, Gare Bear is officially a Longhorn. We're previewing the NFL playoffs, and a couple more huge names have passed away. I'm Trey Elling, back in the Horn studio today as a guy who can talk hoops, sports, music, and a whole lot more. He made my Soul Train dance line dreams come true, and for that I will forever be indebted. It is Isaiah Collier. And sitting next to me is a Waxahachie native and a guy who would do anything for love, but he won't do caboose stuff. It's Chad Hastings.
Ah, you damn right. Hope everybody's having a good Friday. We're headed into divisional weekend in the NFL. We are out in Trey Elling country in a couple different ways, and we'll be filling you in on that throughout the show. And we may even have to start the show with a little sad rest in peace action. But before we do that, Trey, it is cool to be out here. We talked about this one for a while now, and we are out here at Whitestone Boulevard or 1431. Depending on how old you are, whatever you call this road, but 183 and 1431 or 183 and Whitestone is the basic area that you're looking for, and we are here today to hang out with these folks, and they got the big celebration going tomorrow.
Yes, they do. It's on 1431 or Whitestone Boulevard between the 183 toll road and Bell. Look for the Rail Yard Shopping Center, and it's in the back corner of the Rail Yard Shopping Center. It is open now, literally just opened a couple minutes ago. We do have dollar off of beers if you want to consume a little bit, or my offer still stands, Chad. If you come visit us, you haven't had a hop water yet, or maybe you have had hop water and just want a hop water on me, first hop water is on me today.
Yeah, and he ain't lying because I'm having a hop water right now, and it was on you.
Oh, so good on in the tap. It's great. From the can, which is obviously the way that you're going to be drinking it at home, but to drink it off the tap in here, it's just even better, Chad.
Yeah, to go super nerdy, it's like the guys in Tron when they got to drink from the pure source, when they got to lay down near the river of energy and put it in their power discs and drink it, and they just started to glow a little extra. That's what we got going on right now.
I feel like if you haven't given your Whitestone concoctions that you're going to tell us about in the crap bag today a name, River of what?
The River of Energy or?
River of Energy.
River of Energy.
That needs to be one of the names for your drinks. But yeah, and what we're doing out here today is we are kind of pre-partying before the six-year anniversary party that they're holding tomorrow. There are going to be some special beer releases, including one called I Like Turtles. You want a s'more? And then Cherry Trejo. They tell you a little bit about those beers after a while. But there's also going to be some great food, live music, limited edition glassware for purchase, and just coming and hanging out with other people in the community who love this brewery as much as I do.
It's going to be really a good time. So get on out here and check it out. We will talk to one of the guys from Whitestone coming up at 12:30. Also, we've got the Degenerates for you. Divisional round. These are tough games now. Everything tightens up. All those lines tighten up. So is it an over-under? Is it the line? What do they think? Brandon Lang coming up at 105 from BrandonLang.com. And, of course, Sammy P., the betting analyst from Nesson, coming up at 2:05. And at 1:30, I'm going to try to make my move. It's going to be aggression time between myself and Isaiah. Trey already has to wear the mohawk. But the question is, do Trey and I have to stare at each other for 2 weeks wearing mohawks? So I'm going to have to get a little aggressive today, Trey. I'm still trying to figure out what my play is going to be, but I'm going to have to go different than Isaiah on some of these picks. So I am sending nothing but negative vibes towards Isaiah when it comes to the picks. We'll do that at 1:30. See if I can gain any ground. I'm three games back with seven to go. So we have all that going on. We got a couple of updates here to start with, but you and I are music snobs. You and I do talk entertainment and comedy a lot. So these two names definitely matter in those worlds. I had multiple people already reacting today. Rest in peace, Meatloaf and Louis Anderson. I think both early this morning were pronounced, you know, officially announced as dead by the, you know, entertainment media or whatever. And I'm getting texts from Rick Sagamano and my wife and everything. So really sad stuff. One of them, I think Meatloaf was 74 and Louis was 68.
Okay.
I think I have those numbers right. Yeah.
And a good gauge for you and me when we decide whether or not to talk about somebody who has just passed away is sometimes our wives reaching out to us to let us know that it has happened. And that was the case with Meatloaf a little bit earlier. Now, to a question that's being asked this morning on the Horn airwaves.
Oh, here we go.
About whether you might be responsible for either of these. I think we heard Craig talking about it during Light the Tower.
Craig mentioned it because somebody texted in. Has Chad been talking about either one of these gentlemen?
I always joke that an investigation is underway, but I really may have to go back and listen the previous 2 weeks because you've talked about Meatloaf before, and you haven't exactly done so in glowing terms, my friend.
Okay, so first off, I am clean on the Louis Anderson discussion. I've always loved Louis and Coming to America. You and I have talked about him in Baskets.
So good in Baskets.
Christine Baskets, who owns a cat named Ronald Reagan. I'm all about that. So I'm off the hook on Louis. Meatloaf, if I'm responsible, it's a slow burn responsibility. Because I literally can't remember the last time we discussed Meatloaf on air. I don't, in the last year, couple years, even the whole time you and I have been doing this show together, I don't know if we've ever even talked Meatloaf. Now, to be fair, if any time on the air, if someone had ever asked me what I thought of Meatloaf and asked me for my breakdown of Meatloaf, Chad, do you like Meatloaf? What about Bat Out of Hell? What about this? What about that? He would fall into the category because he was in the right age group, and I'll tell you, I respect what Meatloaf is, and I know a lot of people that dig him. Not my thing. Not my thing. I'm not a fan. I'm real lukewarm on Meatloaf stuff.
So you're saying that if you are guilty here, you're more like that parent who is feeding his or her child a small amount of poison at dinner each night to where it's much more difficult to trace back to you than you,
yeah.
Sicko.
If you want to make it the long haul version, I'll take that responsibility. But it'll be a long haul because I can't remember the last time I talked about Meatloaf on air.
The slow play murder.
But what I always think of when Meatloaf comes up is Kevin Dunn has a great Meatloaf story where he met him at a celebrity softball game. Jeff Howe mentioned
that. Del Diamond, yeah.
Yeah, he was out at Del Diamond. And the cool part about Meatloaf to me is I haven't heard – every story I've heard of him is – good dude stories.
Right.
Like, he was a great guy. So I love hearing that about famous people. And, you know.
He has a very Bob Saget reputation. Like, a lot of people are coming out today and saying, this is, like, truly one of the awesome people out there.
The other thing I like about – I like Meatloaf, the crossover version. I like Meatloaf, the actor.
Oh, like, more than a musician.
Definitely. I'm not – again, music is we all know it's a matter of taste. So not exactly my style of music all the time with him, but I always loved him as an actor.
I don't really remember what he's done other than, like, Fight Club, where he obviously did awesome.
Okay, so one of my favorites, I think I'm right on Meatloaf. If you can pull up the discog or filmography here, wasn't Meatloaf in – was he in Leap of Faith with Steve Martin? Because I'm a big fan of that movie, and
he was 1992.
Okay.
He played Hoover.
Yes, that's one of my favorite supporting roles for him. But he was great in that way, and I just like hearing stories of famous people that were nice to us regular folk. And apparently, that was Meatloaf. So rest in peace to Meatloaf, a Texas kid. I'd forgotten that. Craig mentioned it. Craig said today he's born in Dallas.
Huh.
I didn't realize that. And Louis Anderson, just you know, a legend in comedy. And my wife saw something today that Pauly Shore and a bunch of comics had gone to the hospital to see him. He'd had cancer for a while. They knew it was about to happen. Mm-hmm. So as horrible as that is, they got to say goodbye. Like, they knew Louis was about to go, and Pauly Shore and some of these other guys that were friends with him got to say their goodbyes, and Louis got to say his goodbyes. So I'm assuming there was a lot of good emotion in that room.
So Louis, actor, comedian, and game show host.
Yes. Oh, that's right. He did, not Price is Right, he did Family Feud for a while.
Family Feud.
Yeah.
And I feel like, if nothing else, he's not the low man on the totem pole in terms of host of that show. That has to be the guy who played Al Borland, right?
Well,
not to put myself on the clock for him.
Well, not to be too cruel, but if hosting the show might have caused you to kill yourself. Would that put you at the bottom of the list? I'm just asking. I'm asking. I'm trying to give Al Borland his fair share here.
No, I don't think that's fair to judge a man based on where he was with the entirety of his life.
No, that's fair. And I think Combs did a better job than the Al Borland guy.
Okay.
He did a solid job there. I wish that guy could have figured out kind of who he was, because I thought he was a lifelong, solid, badass game show host, and apparently he didn't like that.
Hmm.
But, yeah, he was better than Borland, so it's probably him. Louis, I'd put a notch or two above whatever that guy's name is that plays Borland.
Yeah, I just never went back and or I never watched Family Feud at that time that he was the host. That was kind of when I was transitioning into watching other stuff as like a late teens, early 20s cat. I'm willing to guess that it was maybe not quite as entertaining as Steve Harvey, but there were probably some really good moments with him.
And I'm going to admit to you, I am an OG guy when it comes to Family Feud. So if it ain't Richard Dawson, it's not really Family Feud to me, but I will accept some Steve Harvey every now and again. I thought Louis was good. I thought Combs did a good job. And at times, even the Al Borland guy was all right.
I am questioning whether you really thought Combs did a good job based on that crack that you took a few minutes ago. That was well done.
I'm just asking a question.
That threw me through a loop. I forgot what I said. I was so blown away by that one.
He's a great lesson for all of us, I think, in this. You think in your head the way somebody might react to something, but it's like, no. Reset your brain for a second. Imagine having to do that every day. And if you don't deal with it the right way, it could drive you crazy. It might have done that to him.
It's like hearing the song "It's a Small World After All" over and over again working at Disney World, right? Eventually that's going to get to you and it may make you snap.
That's a good point. You know what? You just reminded me the other night, one of the worst movies ever made, Beverly Hills Cop 3, was on.
Mm.
There really is only one good joke in that whole movie, and it's when at the end of it they keep playing this annoying Wonder World
song. Oh yeah, cuz it was at an amusement park.
And one of the cops actually screams out, "Will somebody shut that effing song up," or whatever. That really is the only good joke probably in that whole movie. All right, so rest in peace to Meatloaf, to Louis Anderson, and we hope there is not a third in the trifecta that we will find out about like later today. I don't know if this starts another trifecta or how it works.
What is going on with this, Chad? It used to be like something that would span, I don't know, a year. And then recently it became a month with the three who died between Madden, Betty White, and Saget. Are we really to daily trifectas now?
I don't know if it's going to be
this
daily thing.
Going up in flames.
I will just keep pointing out that if you start looking up people that matter to you in entertainment, music, acting, and all of that, you're going to find a bunch of them in their 70s. I'm just going to tell you, and it's just where we are right now, timing-wise. So rest in peace to those guys. Grab yourself a little Bat Out of Hell today. I Would Do Anything for Love. That's Bat Out of Hell 2, I believe, the Return album years later.
Great video, by the way.
Oh, the video's awesome. Oh, my God.
His co-star is a babe.
Yeah, absolutely. And the woman that sings on there with him, too. I guess that's her, too. But
whoever, that's right.
Whoever sings on, she's incredible too. Louis Anderson, grabbed some old stand up of Louis from back in the day. I remember the first time I saw Louis Anderson, he walked out and he says to the crowd, "I know what you're thinking, and I'm just going to get it out of the way now. Yes, I know I'm this big." And then later in the bit, he was wiping his face with a towel and he said, "I have to sweat or explode." It was literally one of the first things he said. Oh my
That's
God.
That's good.
Yeah. He was the first comedian I ever saw that was overweight and dealt with it out in the open.
Yeah, you know, he wasn't trying to hide anything.
No, he owned it.
That's how you have to do it with something like that.
Yeah, good stuff there, man. Rest in peace to those two guys. They did good stuff. Obviously, today is not good that we have to talk about them in that way, but we wanted to start that way today.
So there was one episode of Baskets, I think it's when she started dating Dude in Colorado, where the entire episode was focused on the mom character. I'm going to have to go back and watch that episode this weekend. That was brilliant. I think he literally won a primetime Emmy for that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Won and was nominated for one or two others.
Well, I think that specific episode is what
won the episode.
The
okay.
One, the one gotcha. That he won. But yeah, he was nominated a couple of other times too. He was incredible on that show.
Yeah, just incredible. You are a good actor. If you are a man, you play a woman, and you can convince me by the end of the run that you are no longer a man. I didn't think of him as Louis Anderson anymore.
And that happened pretty fast.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into the sports part of it, the spec set piece today. Things become official. Here we go.
The Specs Set Piece is brought to you by Specs Wine, Spirits, and Finer Foods. Cheer on Verde with Specs' larger selection of world-class wines, spirited spirits, and craft beers. Score more at Specs, official partner of Austin FC.
Yes, indeed. All right. I love the way Jeff Howe phrased this on Light the Tower. If you needed it in blood, Gary Patterson is official now. Jeff told you yesterday on Light the Tower that he was in the directory at UT. If you looked it up yesterday, he was in the directory. And why in the world would he sit in CDC's suite and wear a Longhorn logo, Trey, unless he was actually going to take the job? In fact, now we know he's had this job for about a week or so. He's already been grinding on film, but now it's official. He's the assistant to the head coach at the University of Texas, and Gary Patterson is in.
Yeah, I think he's finishing his second full week, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I think he started 2 Mondays ago. And look, we've said our piece, us Longhorn fans who are a little bit skeptical about this, just based on past history and recent history, and wondering if Gary has maybe lost a little bit with regards to what he has been so good at with this sport. But if there is a role to put him in where, I don't want to say neutralized because that sounds a little bit mean, but if he isn't bringing it like he needs to, that he is not serving in a larger capacity in terms of having to coach individual players, developing these guys, scheme a defense necessarily, but he is there as a sort of safeguard if you need to make a quick change on that side of the ball next year.
Yeah, I think that what you hope for as a Texas fan is that you are getting – it's a guy that obviously – they don't make statues of you if you turned yourself into a bad head coach. He was a good coach. He was a really good coach. Some TCU fans would tell you he was a great coach at times there. But he's also a badass number two if you need him to be. He's a badass coordinator, and he's highly respected. So – if you're a Longhorn fan, what you're hoping is adjustments will be made anyway with Kwiatkowski and that side of the ball, and that development will happen. And what he gets to do, Gary Patterson, is just go total Dr. Frankenstein, mad scientist on some film. He doesn't have to talk to media. He doesn't have to answer stupid questions. He doesn't have to go on crazy long recruiting trips. He just gets to grind. He gets to go John Gruden without the TV cameras and without the silly interviews. He's just going to think football, and I would hope for Texas fans that's a relieving thing for him right now. You know what I'm for a year or so, just to reset, just to step back. Maybe it is like the Dick Tomey thing that we talked about yesterday, but just get to reset for a year or so.
I kind of wish that if you were going to bring him aboard like this, you are making it in more of that official assistant coach capacity, because otherwise that's just hanging over the head of everybody. And that's not to say he and Kwiatkowski can't work well together, but that's got to be in the backs of a lot of people's minds right now. Like, if you were a Texas fan, Chad, you see you have Gary Patterson as the special assistant and Kwiatkowski as the official DC. Who would you rather have in that defensive coordinator position? Like, if this were A&M.
I mean, you know, if it was right, if you're in a perfect world, that's a fair question. I think the discussion would be, couldn't you argue that if he was an actual assistant coach, it would be more of a distraction? Because he is at least a step or two away from what you're talking about. Because he's an analyst here.
Right.
You can say assistant to the head coach all you want, but he is an analyst. He is two full steps away from even being thought of for defensive coordinator. Couldn't you argue the opposite, that this gives you that space that you need?
So he's in the football offices, has been for the last couple of weeks. Obviously, it's part of the reason why he was at the Irwin Center the other night. And he's probably going to be around the offices a lot during the year. You just need to be. The face-to-face thing is much more important versus doing everything by Zoom. We've all found that out in the last 2 years. Certainly a profession that is all about person-to-person, getting to be in one another's face when need be. That is going to be the case, too. I'm just wondering where that point is where we're not seeing his presence as much. Like, is he out there attending practices regularly during the spring
before the season gets going? See, that's the thing that we don't have a good grasp on. So it almost would be a good idea to probably ask somebody in Tuscaloosa, or maybe Clemson's done a little more of this, but when Saban's had these analyst guys, when Muschamp, Major, Charlie Strong, when they were truly analysts at these schools, were they ever at practice? Were they ever on the sideline? If the answer is no, That's kind of what that's what I'm expecting from Gary Patterson. I do not expect to see Gary on the sideline. I don't expect to see him in a press box, and I don't expect to hear about him walking around at practice. I guess practice is different. Practice, I would assume maybe he is there. I'm assuming analysts get to go to practice and break stuff down if they want him to.
I wonder about game attendance. Like, I don't think you would see him on the sideline. That may not even, like, legally be allowed by the NCAA.
Yeah, I don't think he can be.
But I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the box, though, because isn't he still able to give his input?
I don't know. That's a good question. But, well, on game day, though, you don't want him in the headset, do you?
Kwiatkowski is in the booth, correct? Do you want him in the booth with Kwiatkowski?
My gut would be no.
Yeah, I think there needs to be that. Yeah. That separation needs to be there.
And I think those questions are going to be hopefully.
Like, his input is during the week. His input should be minimal on game day, because that's where it really does become a distraction if, let's say, there's a major disagreement with something.
That's true. I think one thing you and I both know, as long as we've been following this team and we know the guys, we know the men and women that cover this team, they're going to ask. They are going
to
ask.
Okay, and Craig just clarified to Zay. Thank you, Zay. Analysts cannot be in the box.
Well,
he's not even allowed to be there. Okay,
I didn't
good.
Think so. And again, to clarify, for those people saying they saw Will Muschamp on a sideline, he became the special teams coach.
Right.
That's a very different story. Their special teams coach had a medical deal, and Muschamp took a coaching job. Then he could be on the sideline.
I knew the sideline wasn't possible. It's good to hear that the box isn't either.
Right. So I think this could be a really cool mad scientist version where we may not even know the impact of Gary Patterson, and maybe those questions do get asked and answered by some of the media along the way. But hopefully he just gets to, you know, give that football expertise, help them out, and tweak some things up on the defensive side, because obviously they need that. When you have a defense that put out some of the numbers Texas did, I think Kwiatkowski and all those guys would have to admit, all right, Gary, what do you see? Because obviously we weren't good enough last year.
They're on blast regardless heading into the 2022 season. This just makes it that much more imperative that they figure things out.
Yep, no doubt. So Gary Patterson, official as the assistant to the head coach at Texas. We will also get you updated on the NFL throughout the day. Lots of injury stuff out there, but the biggest one is going to be Derrick Henry. 3:00 this afternoon is the deadline for the Tennessee Titans to officially activate Derrick Henry. The reports out of Nashville are that they will do that, and he will start against Cincinnati. So if you're a Bengals fan, I am sorry to bring you that news today on a Friday, but I think you knew it was probably coming. All right, coming up, we'll tell you a little bit more about Whitestone and what they've got going on here and what they've got going on this weekend. Ryan Anglin, one of the owners, is going to talk to us here in a second. Coming up a little later in the crap bag at 12:45, I will tell you my three favorite ways to do a little hop water. Plus, we got fines all over sports. I will tell you what they did and how much they are getting fined for what they did. That's all coming up. We're at Whitestone Brewery here on Whitestone Boulevard, 1431, if you like, right off of 183 toll. Come on out and see us, or make your plans to get out to that 6th anniversary special tomorrow right here at Whitestone, or both. This is The Horn.
Shirts and skins.
That I wish you saw.
I like when Isaiah starts with one that I know, because then I feel like I can get in. You know what I mean? Like, you need an early success. Like in your running game, you get a good 8-yard run early on in a ball game.
Yeah.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, I got this one.
This isn't my favorite, but this is a smooth song. It's hard not to like this song at least a little bit, you know?
Would this be the Californication era, Red Hot Chili Peppers? Not the song, obviously, but is it that time frame?
I feel like it was an album before, but you may be right about
in
that.
Area?
Zay, do you know the answer there?
Yeah, it's Californication.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, right in that time.
Good call.
There you go. Isaiah Collier producing, which means normally we do start off with a little alt rock. Red Hot Chili Peppers for you? How big a fan?
Me?
You into the Peppers?
I love Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and there are songs since then that I dig. This is on that list, but that's the one album that I'm, like, truly familiar with. Because that was the heyday of me loving grunge music in the mid-1990s, you know?
That'll do it. That'll do it. More music from Isaiah coming up throughout the show. Isaiah and I will go head up in the picks. Trey will probably pick games too, but he's done. He's got to wear the mohawk. We'll see if I do. See if I can catch Isaiah coming up at 1:30. Brandon Lang at 1, Sammy P at 2. And right now, Trey, we're going to tell people a little bit more about Whitestone.
That's right. We are so happy to be out here today. The day before Whitestone Brewery celebrates its six-year anniversary, they're doing so tomorrow with an all-day party, includes some special beer releases, live music, good food, limited edition glassware for purchase as well. And the man who is partially responsible, because he co-owns this with his wife Danielle, is Ryan, the co-owner of Whitestone Brewery here in Cedar Park. Ryan, first of all, thank you so much for having us out today.
Thank you guys for being out. We love you guys.
We love you as well. Ryan Anglin is the full name for those interested. And Ryan, tell us a little bit about the process that has taken to open a brewery here in a growing city like Cedar Park and making it for more than a half decade now. That on its own is impressive, much less just the way you guys have continued to build in that time.
Yeah, I think first off, you're going to get a lot of points from Danielle for mentioning her, so that's good on you.
Trey knows.
It's been a journey. It feels like 12 years, really. I guess they always say the five-year mark is kind of that time that you've made it. So to be turning six is pretty special accomplishment. We have a great team. I mean, I'll kind of do the cliche, but it really is the people we have behind the scenes making the beer, putting their personality into it. So it's been a very strenuous journey at times, but it's been a great journey. But Cedar Park, I mean, you guys know that the last 2 years have been pretty awkward, to say the least. So
right.
Cedar Park's rallied around us and been great.
Yeah, I feel very thankful living in this city, whereas so many other places, not just in this area but nationally, have been pretty clunky with making sure that they're protecting people and businesses and whatnot. Cedar Park has done a great job of making sure that all sides are covered, you know. And as far as the people behind the scenes, I completely agree with you. I've had the opportunity to meet a bunch of y'all now. We went to a Texas game.
That was great.
Later in the year, once all the expectations were off, but it was still a lot of fun, obviously.
It was.
Low pressure Texas game.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. And, and it's also an honor to get to represent you guys specifically with Hopwater. And I am so excited about the future of Hopwater. I know there's a production facility that's going to be opening up eventually in Liberty Hill. And you guys have some bigger plans after that as well. When did you decide to get into the carbonated water game? And did it have a lot to do with a concoction that you guys were just kind of playing around with on the side?
It did, yeah. I mean, it's more of an internal beverage, started as that. And I believe we're the first to market in Texas with it, but it was really something we were consuming internally. And, you know, I would credit, again, my wife is one that kind of pushed the envelope with this product. And, you know, she loves it, drinks it all the time. So we kind of just gauged, you know, is there a market for this? And we started to, you know, we put it on tap internally. Customers started to drink it. There's a big non-alc movement out there. And so we kind of just fell into it, but it was a product that we tested ourselves and drank for a year before we really put it out.
Yeah, definitely something we would recommend to people. If you've not tried Hopwater, you can come by and do that, get you that. It's got the feel, in a way, the feel of a beer, but it's not. It's a really interesting take on it. It's something I've gotten into, kind of that sparkling water world the last couple of years, trying to keep the weight maintained and stuff like that. And now it's become one of my favorites, man. Yeah. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
For the people that are into their beers, everybody's looking for a blonde, sometimes in life, but always in beer. What about the Long Gone Blonde? Tell them about it.
Yeah, it's been a top seller from day one. Really universal beer that kind of spans demographics, and it for us never wavers. It's been one that we have a hard time keeping up with, and it's just an easy drinking beer. We put a little vanilla and orange peel in it, so it gives it that little twist on a typically kind of boring brand, I guess you would say, boring style. The blonde has been great. Men, women, doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
whenever we go to Styles and Style Switch, and this is a once or twice a month process, if we're eating at Style Switch, Justine and I will have a conversation going into that. Do we want to drink tonight? And the answer is oftentimes no. We don't want to drink. We just want to have barbecue. That's cool. But we get to the end of the line, and we see the Long Gone Blonde tap. It's impossible not to get one of those mini pitchers. It is. Yeah. I mean, it's great out of the can. Don't get me wrong. You want to pour it into a pint glass so that carbonation releases a little bit. It is so silky smooth coming out of the tap.
Now, is there something about the tap handle? Like, is there a hot blonde on the tap handle? What's going on? Do I need to see the tap handle? Where is it?
I wish I could say we did have that.
No?
It's,
oh, okay.
It's pretty
all right.
boring.
All right, just making sure. All right.
It's purely the logo. That's how good it
that's
is.
That's how it gets you. No, it's a great logo, too. And Whitestone definitely has that. All right, you and I were talking in the break about, I'm not ashamed to admit, I don't mind some fruit in my beer sometimes. The hazy IPA world sure. has started to go crazy. Give me a hazy IPA recommendation.
Yeah, we do ours pretty seasonally. We always have at least 3 to 5 IPAs on tap. That could be your traditional West Coast IPAs or the hazy IPAs. So right now we're kind of transitioning out of our Keyboard Gangsta. Yes, that name is a little shot on
Keyboard Gangsta.
Some of the
good
social
name.
Media.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's kind of a beer that we do sort of a twist between a West Coast and a hazy IPA. So we do have a little bitterness on the back end. We're transitioning into our Ray Ray hazy IPA. It's another one that's a really popular offering by us. We have a hard time keeping up with that. So that will go for the next 6 months. So I would definitely recommend that one.
Now, a beer that's going to be out in a couple of weeks is another one of my favorites up here, and that is the Melted Snowman, but on a nitro tap. Yes, just another one of those silky smooth beers. It really hits the spot when things are a little bit cooler outside. So if you're going to be out here today or tomorrow for the 6-year anniversary, highly recommend getting one of those because you don't have too much longer for that one.
Yeah, it's a again sort of a unique beer. It's a it's kind of a stout base that we put a play on. There's some Belgian candy syrup in there, so it really does identify with that kind of winter going all the way into February offering that people just they like a lot. So we've got a great response.
So tomorrow is going to include some special beer releases. Do you care to tell us a little bit about
sure.
either the I like turtles.
Yeah.
You want a s'more. Very curious about that one. And Cherry Trejo.
Yeah, this was a fun one. And to be honest with you, I've probably been more detached from these. This has been kind of a creation of all the guys in back having fun. We let them each kind of take their twist on a bourbon barrel-aged beer that we've had in barrels for quite some time. And, you know, put whatever flavor they wanted to on it. And then, of course, Jackie, our marketing manager, went to work with the artwork, which she always has fun doing. So yeah, these are we like to do a lot of spin-offs and kind of take a beer and morph it into something else, mm-hmm. Sometimes multiple ways. So they're all small batch, but we canned them up in 19.2s. We're doing variety 4-packs tomorrow. So you'll have these three as well as the base bourbon barrel aged beer. So we're excited. I've actually haven't even tasted them all myself yet. So, kind of saving it for tomorrow, and I'm excited. I think people will like them. Yeah.
Is there a beer that y'all have created where you've made a flavor suggestion that has turned out to be the secret to unlocking that beer tasting as good as it possibly could?
I'm sure there has been. I mean, we've done, I think, over 250 styles and beers and recipes since we opened. So mm-hmm. it's
wow.
hard to remember sometimes.
Yeah.
And again, that's being a small batch brewery. You have that luxury. I guess right now, top of mind would be our Keyboard Gangsta was initially a mistake, right? It was kind of during the start of the hazy movement. We were just testing some hop additions, and we got a little bitterness out of it, and it turned into something that we wanted to kind of take and put that marketing play on and also say, you know what, there's nothing wrong with getting something that's juicy as well as a little bitterness. So we rolled with it.
Excellent.
Very nice.
And, Ryan, I have to ask you about this before we say goodbye for the day. We'll
sure.
say goodbye to you on the air. We're still going to be here for another couple of hours.
Sounds like you're being set up. Get ready, Ryan.
I hear there was a domination that happened in your fantasy football league
boy.
This year. What was Kevin referencing
oh,
that he wanted me to ask
I see.
You about?
Yeah, first I think you got to stop listening to Kevin. he's halfway hammered all the time. So, you know, there's always that. But, you know, Kevin blacked out. I don't even think he knows he was in the league. lineups weren't set. I mean, there was a lot of things that went wrong with that. So,
yet yeah. he still won it? Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, it's hard. I haven't said it out loud yet.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
He did.
You're going to go Fonzie on that one.
It's
I got
one of those
you.
Things.
Okay.
Kevin's had a hard year. You know, we decided we'll just give it to him this year. So I had a team that was stacked to the gills, and somehow I they failed me 1 week.
Who was on your team?
Oh, my goodness. I had Kupp, Stafford, Jonathan Taylor, Justin Jefferson in a 14-team league.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean,
sounds like a good team. Sounds like a good play.
Yeah, they just had that 1 week.
Yeah, okay.
Where everybody was just a little bit down. It's so funny how that happens in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That'll get you.
Of course, I've been made the villain of the league, so everybody, you know, was rooting against me for that. But I take it. I accept it. It's fine.
You were Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Didn't quite get that done. Yeah. But they are getting it done out here at Whitestone. Remember, tomorrow is the 6th anniversary celebration. You can check them out at whitestonebrewery.com. Give everybody the times for tomorrow, when you guys are going to be going tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going pretty much all day, so we'll open at noon. The beers will be packaged in 4-packs. You guys can take them. We have a cold cookie company out here. I believe they get here at about 3 o'clock. Live music by Rufina Austin starting at, I believe, 5. So come on out. Spend the day with us.
Very cool.
Excellent. Can't wait.
Whitestone Brewery. Get on out here. Whitestone Boulevard. We're going to be here throughout the show today. Up next in the crap bag, I'll give you my 3 favorite ways to do hop water. Plus, what did they do to get fined, and how much are they getting fined? I will tell you on the horn.
Shirts and skins.
Uh-huh. All right, Trey, you got this one, right?
It's getting near dawn.
We're going to be
Eric Clapton, right?
He's a part of it.
Cream.
There you go. There you go. Cream in the sunshine of your love.
When was the song made?
Oh, this has got to be, Zay will tell us here in a second, but it's got to be mid to late 60s. I'm going to guess like 65 to 67.
Incredible. There's a reason why these guys are thought of as trailblazers.
Oh, yeah.
That sound didn't exist before them.
Heavy, heavy stuff. Isaiah, am I right? Mid-60s?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Great band, too. One of the best three-piece bands ever put together. Clapton's on guitar, Jack Bruce on bass and singing, and one of my favorite drummers that ever walked the face of the earth, Ginger Baker. Just an absolute monster, flailing, body parts everywhere, cool, psychedelic kind of drummer. Love Ginger Baker.
Ginger Baker? Was Ginger a dude or a lady?
He's a man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he's a guy. Ginger Baker.
Did he have red hair?
He did. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he was fantastic. That was such a great band back in the day. Shout out to Cream. Nice job there by Isaiah. So starting out with a little Red Hot Chili Peppers, and then we end ending the hour here with some Cream. All right. We also talked to Ryan Anglin of Whitestone. Remember, Whitestone's 6th anniversary party going on tomorrow. Get on out here. He told you they're opening up about 12, live music. New beers will be debuted. All kinds of cool stuff. Let's get into the crap bag here. We'll talk some Whitestone and some other stuff.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
All right, it's brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. I will get to the bad boys and the fines they have to pay, but first off, I'll give my love to Whitestone a couple different ways. First off, I have now tried my first Whitestone beer. I wanted to try this Keyboard Gangster, because you know me, sucker for a cool name. So I'm into the hazy IPA world, and Ryan described it perfectly. The mixture of like a hazy, you know, fruity IPA, but also that great bite that the hops can give you. Definitely come out and try the Keyboard Gangsta. About a 6.5 on that ABV. Really cool IPA.
And I'm not a big hazy IPA guy, but that was good. I'm a total idiot when it comes to the brewing process, but I feel like whatever's in play with the hops in that is also in play with the hop water. Like, I'm getting some sort of similarity there.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Now, to the hop water, once you started telling me about hop water, I listened to my branding, I listened to my spokespeople. You said hop water's good by itself, or it's good mixing with my favorite spirits. So I went home and started messing around with that. I'm a very simple guy when it comes to drinking, so I'm not trying to make anything super fancy. My 3 favorite ways to enjoy hop water are, 1, on the rocks, non-alcoholic version. I love just drinking hop water.
I've never gone rocks with the hop water.
I go over the rocks.
I guess I have with a cocktail.
Because it gives me that alcohol feel, even though I'm not actually drinking alcohol.
Ah.
Also, just to, you know me, I am a snob for the way things feel when it comes to cans and bottles. The feel of the hop water can is priceless. It's just rough enough where it's not too slick. You don't even need a koozie sometimes, mm-hmm. but I love the feel of that can. So that's the first way. The second way is vodka. Vodka and hop water. So vodka hop or Tito's hop, because normally I'm going with Tito's vodka.
You do a squeeze of citrus in there?
I don't. I just go
on its own.
Shot of vodka, the rest hop water, let's roll.
Okay.
The third way that I enjoy the hop water is a whiskey hop, which is my man Rick Sacamano turned me on to a whiskey because I told him I want a little bit of flavor in the whiskey. I'm not a hardcore whiskey guy. Turned me on to a kind of whiskey called Old Camp.
Okay.
It's got peach. It's what is it? Peach and pecan in the whiskey, and it's called Old Camp, so I'm going to call it Camp Water.
Oh, love that.
Camp Water is my other drink.
That gets a taste from me just based on the name alone.
Very tasty.
Well done.
Very, very tasty.
And mine remains the same. I've been talking about it since the summer.
Yeah, what's yours called again?
Half gin.
Yep.
Half hop water. Usually half a lime. Some, if you get a juicy lime, a really juicy lime, you could go quarter lime. But half hop water, half gin, squeeze a lime. And I call it the hip-hop-opotamus.
The hip-hop-opotamus. I like that one.
I didn't know if it would carry over into the winter because it's the perfect summer beverage, but it does. It works well in the cold weather, too.
Did you ever watch Larry Sanders' show with Gary Shandling?
Bits and pieces. That was a little bit before my time.
One of my favorite characters was the Rip Torn character, and mm-hmm. I think it was at a party where he mentions this, or they go over to his house or whatever, and his favorite drink, he called it the salty dog, and it was four parts salt, one part vodka. That was the drink. It was great. All right, so whatever your favorite drink is, we hope you're maybe enjoying a little bit of that today, and if you haven't had some of the White Stone products, we would invite you out here. Check it out. White Stone Boulevard here in Cedar Park. All right, Trey, so here are your fines and finers. Is that how you say it? Your people that commit a fine, people that do something. Anyway, whatever those people are called. So if you do something that gets you fined, what are you? You are the
If you do suspect. Something that gets you,
you are
fined.
The guilty party.
Is yeah, that, guilty party.
Right. So
the finee.
Dak Prescott got fined for the official comment.
I saw that.
$25,000, by the way.
Is that a lot?
Well, let me just give a comparison here. When Amari Cooper went to a Mavericks game and didn't abide by their COVID protocols
uh-huh.
during a global pandemic where they're arguing he's putting people's lives in danger, they fined him $14,650. When Dak Prescott basically said, hey, did you see them throw bottles at the officials or stuff at the officials? And he went, credit to them, $25,000. That just doesn't seem even to me.
That's interesting. You are taking issue with this. I have no problem with those amounts.
Okay.
And valuing the official shot more than Amari Cooper not being strict about the face mask thing, which we can have a different conversation about how arbitrary that whole process is. Still should have been fine because he broke the rules, but I would treat the ref thing more serious because you just gave the thumbs up to fans
yeah,
throwing trash did. At officials if they don't like calls.
You're right. Maybe it does need to be a little more serious. The other one, did you see this NBA game where an assistant coach touched the ball during play and nobody saw it? Excuse
no.
me. No official
oh,
saw
yeah,
it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, where he was like pointing. He wasn't trying to touch the ball. He was pointing for something and the ball hit his hand.
To me, it looked like he was trying to gesture with the hand. The hand was kind of out, like, you know, fingers extended, but I don't think he was trying to do it.
Right.
His name is David Vanterpool. He is an assistant for Brooklyn. He has now been fined $10,000 for it, and Brooklyn got fined $25,000 as a team for that interference play. But my question would be,
what
if the officials had actually seen it properly, would you still be fining them for it? Why, you're fining them like he did it on purpose. There's no evidence he did it on purpose.
Now, that is ridiculous by them. What the hell has happened to the NBA in the last couple
I don't know,
years?
But that official needs to, all they needed to do was stop it. The Wizards is the team they were playing, and you probably saw the highlights. The Wizards team, coaches, and everybody were like, are you guys really not going to do anything about that? It was so obvious the ball had been touched.
Wow.
Yo, fellas.
Yo.
Sir. The Wizards actually lost by one. So that was a big-time possession that resulted in a turnover. So, yeah they deserve the fine.
No, it's a great point. I guess somebody's got to pay.
Zay, let me ask you this, because I obviously don't watch a ton of NBA games right now. Is this something that's happening in a common enough manner that they're trying to stop it, too? I mean, is this becoming an issue, and this is the first time we're seeing it play out like this, and they're just trying to keep the problem from worsening?
No, not at all. But you know, okay, when you're a coach, don't put your freaking hand out when you're on the court, especially when you know the ball's right close to you. That's just common basketball sense. Homeboy David, he's been in the game long enough to not muck up like he did. Yeah, he deserved the fine. The Nets deserved the fine. And they should give that game to the Wizards, to be honest, since they only lost by one point, and that was such a big part of the game.
So do you think it was intentional then?
No, but I do think maybe my man's basketball instinct came into play.
Oh, interesting.
Right.
You know what? After hearing Zay's opinion on it, I'm okay with the fine. He's right about that. You do need to have more wherewithal in that moment, not to be flailing your hands that are going over the court when the action is happening.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No, I think that is a great point. Carelessness is the best way to probably describe it. I don't know that it looks – I don't know that we could accuse him of doing it intentionally, but Zay's right. That carelessness, it's not like it's his first time to be there. If that was a fan that had gone their first time sitting on the front row, that might be a little bit of a different discussion. This is an assistant coach.
No, if it was a fan, they'd be kicked out of the game and banned for life.
Well, that's true,
unless the fan was doing it to Kyrie Irving, and then Kyrie would probably get fined for it.
That is true. And like Zay brought up, if this had been a 15- or 20-point game, would have been different. It was about, I want to say it was like 5 minutes to go fourth quarter when it happened.
What do you think?
But Zay's right. It was a one-point game at the end.
What do you think about Zay's solution of giving the win to another team? Would you be okay with that?
It's tough. It's tough because it happened at about the 4 or 5 minute mark, but his argument is sound in terms of math. If it's a 1 point game, because on that play, basically the Brooklyn coach ends up hitting the ball and it ends up as a steal on a Washington possession. If we didn't make that clear, it's Washington's ball.
Oh.
He hits the ball up in the air and the Nets actually get a steal off of that and head the other way, if I'm not mistaken. And then
if I'm the NBA, I'm flipping that win.
And that's when the coach and players on the Wizards are looking around like, really?
Wow.
You're going to let that happen? So, I think that's actually that is a good point. A little weird, I guess, in a way, but I think Zay's right. The responsibility ultimately is there, much like the responsibility is there for Dak not to make those kind of comments regarding the officials. And in a way, that's what Cooper's got to deal with too. It is that responsibility element. Yeah.
I don't care how pissed you are. You just can't say that.
Right.
Even if you apologize, he still needed to face a fine.
So Brooklyn and Mr. Vanderpool have to pay a little bit of a fine. There you go. Your crap bag for today. Up next, it is degenerate number one, Brandon Lang, BrandonLang.com. What does he think of the divisional round? He told you to lay the points with Cincinnati, Tampa, and Kansas City, and he was right. He also told you San Francisco was probably going to handle Dallas, and he was right. We'll see what he thinks about it this week coming right up. We're at Whitestone Brewery. Come see us on Whitestone Boulevard here, 183 Toll and 1431. Their sixth anniversary party is tomorrow. Get on out here and see them. This is The Horn.